So I walk into the room. You're playing StarCross Realms with Monica, with my wife.
We had a good time.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the two of you. I hadn't played it yet. You're sitting there with paper cards playing with her. And I hear you guys laughing from the other room as well for like 10 minutes of playing.
Is this where I remind you that you double booked and weren't ready to play when I got there?
Why are you always throwing shade?
Because I'm mean. This is like mean Mr. Mark iteration.
I wasn't ready. And Mark was there, prepared. He had done all his homework.
Ooh, it's been a minute since I've done all my homework.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we repeatedly try and play the top of both cards in Gloomhaven. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
And I don't know what any of that means.
You got to start playing Gloomhaven with me. Classic Misplay. It's where you're planning out your turn, and you think you can do these two things. You commit to it, you lock into it, and then you realize, wait a minute, you can't play the top of both cards. You always have to play the top of one card and the bottom of another card. But during that planning phase, you completely forget about it.
Oh, it's like you make a Frankenstein's monster out of your card every time, right?
Plum pudding?
Yeah.
What is the Frankenstein monster?
Well, like, I'm envisioning, like, you know, meld cards in Magic? I have my card that has two options. I have my other card that has two options. And I'm going to smush them together to make it a card that has two options instead of four.
I don't remember that mechanic. Is it new?
No.
Oh.
Like many years old, but after we had really stopped playing.
It would be like planning to attack with like flying units and then find out your opponent has something that says flying units can't attack. Great. Wasted my whole turn. My plan was to attack with my flying unit.
Speaking of planning and turn sequences in card games, where are we?
We have been playing a parallel version of StarCross Realms. You did your homework. We talked about it in the last show. We said, Mark, let's create a paper copy of StarCross Realms. You did that, but you deviated a little bit. And Peter hasn't even seen lead game designer, Peter. Peter hasn't even seen what you have created yet. You took the three things we were talking about in the last show, that there should be some changes to the buy row, that the chain should function a little bit differently, and that there should be, you know, a win condition when you play a game. So you did all of that and you created a paper copy of the game for us to play.
It felt very much like the way that you took the building blocks and the pieces and some of the concept and vision for MMA Gauntlet and came up with your redesign. I kind of did the same thing with StarCross Realms. I used a lot of what Peter and I had talked about and built on, and some of the cards that he had developed and some of the pieces that he had developed and made, and simplified, I think is a way of putting it, but brought it to a spot where I could make it tangible for you, because I know that was kind of one of the sticking points in translation for us.
What was the tool that you used to create the cards?
I used the same card generator that Board Game Casual recommended, dextrous.com.au. It was a very intuitive way to put in cards quickly. I even came up with what I thought was a cool template for the cards and was able to just knock out writing all the cards very quickly from the concept pieces that I'd written in my pre-work.
I thought it was clever what you did with the card where the text that was relevant to me faced me and the text that was relevant to my playing partner, they could see. So each side of the card was a mirror effect, essentially.
Yeah. It was a neat feature of the program, and I think it serves this particular game really well.
The hardest part for me, I think, in this stage right now is trying to remember that it is okay to be boring. We're at a point where we're at the beginning stages of creating a game. I don't think when they created Wingspan, which is a game that we like, I don't think the first time they sat down to play it, it was polished. I don't think a skyscraper starts as a skyscraper, right? It starts as just like some drawings on some paper. And that's where we're at. We just have some drawings on paper. And it's been really hard for me to, and I'm working on it, just not be like so critical where, you know, it's like, I hate this. This is dumb. I don't like it, you know, and being like, what can I do to make it more likable? What can I do to improve the experience? So I'm working on that. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what we did and our playtests. But before we do, this week's episode is brought to you by Koenig Creations. Koenig Creations is a print and play design studio that seeks to make accessible, fun games that are easy to print. One of the features on their website, and last week we had talked about signing up for their newsletter, one of the features I really enjoy is Wayne's blog. They cover a variety of topics. They talk about their story, their games. They talk about other games, steps to designing a board game. They talk about the Board Game Geek contests that they enter. They're doing, every time I read Wayne's blog, I realize, man, I should be doing more of that. We should be doing more of that. So if you're looking to get a little bit more information about what goes into creating a board game and the board game space, check out Wayne's blog at Koenig Creations, K-O-E-N-I-G, creations with a K.com. Koenig Creations, easy to print, easy to play.
What are we working on?
Playtesting.
It feels like we've done a lot of that recently. We've done a bunch.
Yeah. I don't know what percent of making a board game is playtesting, but it's got to be a big percent.
It's got to be. But also that idea that we've talked about of like playtesting with intention, right? Having an objective every time you sit down and playing. I think you outlined really nicely this week. We were looking at a revision of the chain, revision of the buy row, and starting to piece together what the end game will look like. And I actually found a lot of your insight about the buy row really interesting because my solution wasn't really a good solution. And I think you had ideas that are going to drive us towards hopefully a buy row that meets our objectives for the buy row when we get there.
When I walked out and I saw that you were playtesting with my wife, I looked down and I saw you had implemented, you had created the Winston buy row that we use in Winston Magic Draft.
Yeah. After we talked about it last week, I thought it was going to be a really good solution to preserving some amount of hidden information. It also gives a way of doing a little bit of deduction of like, ooh, what did my partner take? What did I take? And I thought it would be an interesting way of implementing the buy row for us.
What was the first thing I said to you though, when I saw you playing that way?
There's only one card in the row all the time.
That, and when there was more than one card, you weren't taking them all anyway, right? In the Winston Magic Draft, you build up these piles. And then when you want to take that pile, you get all of the cards. And that's the benefit. And sometimes you take a pile of cards you don't really want because it's really good value. So I was thrown off a little bit by you using the Winston draft, but not using like the reason I think you use it. And that's where I started. That's where I jumped in. That was my first comment watching you guys play. But before I say that, Monica was having fun. You guys were having fun playing the game.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear more about your experience of the playtest, because I feel like when you and I sat down to play, the objective, there was a tonal shift. There was a shift in quality of like what the playtest was there for. Like when I was playing with Monica, I was like, come on, let's just play. And when we sat down, it was like, okay, we're working. And I think there was also this element of when we talk about like, is there a role-playing element? Is there not a role-playing element? I felt very much more in character when Monica and I were playing. I wasn't playing with this like playtest mindset. I was playing like, oh, let's like just try, like have a little bit of levity, get a little bit of a laugh. And the shift from that to playtesting felt very stark to me in the way that I experienced playtesting with Monica versus playtesting with you. But before we go back to that, because I think that's going to inform some stuff that we're going to talk about later, my thinking about the Winston buy row, it's interesting that you're like, oh, why aren't you taking all the cards? The reason you take all the cards in the magic version of Winston draft is because it increases your number of decisions. I wanted to put the decision in which card out of that pile do I take in the Winston draft to give some amount of that mystery. Because if there are three cards and both people have seen all three cards in one pile and I take one, now I've created some anticipation of, well, which card did I take? And so it's interesting that like you're thinking in terms of like where the decisions are in Magic versus like where the decisions were in this game.
That makes sense. And before we do go further, like you said, let's actually just, while we're on the mics, let's put some cards down and let the audience hear what was happening when you play the game. So we'll take them through a round.
Okay. One of the other things that is different about this iteration and this setup compared to what Peter has designed, this does not have the character traits that Peter included in his build. And so I designed the starting deck as a combination of compliments and small talk. And compliments generate enthusiasm for our biro, and small talk generates more moves to continue building the chain.
So we've shuffled up. We've drawn a starting hand. Both of us have 5 cards in our hand. Later, we'll talk about the different size starting hands that we started with and why. So in a round, we're both going to have the opportunity to lead, and we're both going to have the opportunity to purchase additional cards. So I would lead off with something like this. I would say to Mark, I want to make small talk. And I would play my card, and small talk allows Mark to make 2 actions or 2 moves.
So in response, I'm going to compliment Jason on his mic work today.
Oh, thank you.
And then I'm also going to tell small talk, tell me about your day.
Well, you know, it's summer, but I'm still working. I'm teaching at a summer program. And is this the part that you liked more with Monica? Did you guys have like real conversations about?
I think that was a little bit of it, but it wasn't necessarily like, tell me about your day. It was more like, it had more of that role play working in the realm of imagination. So like, I don't know, tell me about the vacation you just got back from.
Okay. So then in response to that, I have 2 moves. Mark has given me 2 moves or 2 actions, and I'm going to end our chain here, but I'm going to give him 2 compliments, and I'm going to let him know that I really appreciate his jacket. Did you tie-dye that yourself?
No, I bought it.
That's really great. And you've been growing your hair out and it looks really good.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. I actually really want to get a haircut. Now that our chain is closed, because we're out of moves, we don't have anything that gives us more. We have to count up Jason's enthusiasm. We played 3 compliments in the opening deck. That's the only way you can get enthusiasm. Jason has 3 enthusiasm to go to our biro.
And so then I would go to... We experimented with different ways to do this, but I would go to the buy row and I would purchase what I could for 3 enthusiasm. Eventually, you start to buy cards that make the game a little bit more interesting. So for example, I'm holding a card, Mark, your favorite, Backflip. Backflip gives you a move as my partner, but generates 3 enthusiasm. So you're going to be able to do things that create a lot more enthusiasm over time as you build your deck in the same way that you would if you were playing something like Dominion, where your deck just becomes more powerful. But there were other cards in here. Slow Dance, you were slow dancing with my wife. That was nice of you. Truth or Dare.
I'm not going to lie. I'm proud of some of the design. I'm proud of some of the names of the cards. And in a world where we get to a spot where we have art, I think there's really cool things that you can do with the art for these names.
Say this one, but in song.
I'll keep you my dirty little secret.
Yeah. So this is how the game was played. We were playing these cards and they were a little cutesy, and we were building enthusiasm. And then if we ever got to the key number, which was 10, you could essentially buy the connection point or the victory point. So that was what we were doing. That gives you an idea of kind of how the game plays as we continue to talk about it. And I'm sorry I was not role-playing as well as you would have liked to have seen, but I really think there's like a deeper conversation that happened about this game around role-playing, because I think it's a different experience if you role-play it. I think it's a completely different game if you're actually, you know, role-playing this game versus playing this game to win, right?
Sure. 100% agree. And I know we joked about it when we were playing the other night that it's not very interesting yet. True or false, this game plays very much like Dominion.
Cooperative Dominion. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to something that was very familiar in kind of the traditional quintessential deck builder. And it has a lot of the things that I personally don't enjoy about Dominion. But the departure here that I think we build on as we move forward is the chain as we've defined it. You are dependent on your partner for building a longer chain. There are very few cards in this build of the game that give me additional actions when I play them, or additional moves when I play them. And that for me was the is the single thing that I think about when I think about this game is the chain must invite both players to contribute in a way in which they're dependent on each other to play the game. And all other facets aside, I think this version of the chain is very successful at accomplishing that goal.
And so to break our playtest down, you had played with my wife, and then I came out and we played a few different rounds, and we kept changing things. We would only play halfway through a game and say, let's change this. Let's talk about some of those changes that we made as we experienced it, starting with the changes you made initially to small talk and to compliment.
The objective of the starting deck, right, in a deck builder, is to just give you enough resources to make your first few decisions. And then ideally, those cards become obsolete through the course of the game. Our starting deck had a little bit of the village problem in Dominion, in that it's very, very good to give two actions. Small talk at one point gave two moves to your partner and gave an enthusiasm. And what Monica and I were running into is we would just play our whole deck every turn. And that's not really where we want to be, because it's not very interesting, because again, it limits decisions.
Right.
So the first thing that happened was we took off small talk giving enthusiasm.
Then you took off compliment giving a move.
Yeah, because kind of for the same reason, giving two things off the starting deck, just it still enabled you to play your entire deck. You just didn't get extra moves for when your deck became larger or had more interesting cards. And so really kind of reducing compliments to just currency is trying to meet that goal of letting you get started with some amount of variance in how much enthusiasm you're going to get on the first turn, and then hopefully allowing those cards to become obsolete later in the game.
And so that's where we started. So when I sat down, that was the first change you had made. You had made that change along with the change in hand size.
Yeah, we tried going from, Monica and I started with a hand size of 5. You and I played with a starting hand of 3 for our first game.
And what we realized, I think pretty much right away, was there just wasn't a lot to do with only 3 cards and, you know, reducing the abilities on the cards. So we jumped back up to 5 cards. You tried to then still control it a little bit by, when you played a small talk, which was the card that gave 2 moves, you discarded it. You took it out of your deck because it was really strong.
Yeah. And, you know, there are flavor reasons for that too in my head. Like, you're not going to come back to the same small talk topic or well for building your chains in the course of a date that you would be on. And so, you know, I play my small talk. Oh, like, tell me about your pets. And then I'm not going to ask about your dog like 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
That chain is done. It's time to move on. And so taking out that small talk is kind of that physical representation of, we did that one. Let's move on to something else.
And I like that. And then I think the next place that we went was changing up the buy row a little bit. You let me do the thing that I wanted to do. In the end, I don't think it worked out, but what we did was make the Winston piles similar to how we play in Magic, where when you go to the pile, you can take all of the cards. But what we did was we said, okay, well, you can take all of the cards that you can afford to buy with your enthusiasm. If you have 4 enthusiasm, and then inside your pile, there's a card with 5 enthusiasm, you don't get to take that one. That one stays behind. And we did that. And I think we quickly saw that, no, that's too strong. You can't have that many great cards immediately. I like buying just one card and not getting like 3 at a time.
I think one of the other things that came up while we were grappling with the buy row was this version of the playtest was set to be 10 turns and the game ends. This is a holdover from the activity component that Peter built into his version. And so I was like, okay, let's just choose an arbitrary number of what we called rounds. And that'll be the thing that you're racing against, right? Like, we need something to compete against. We're trying to get some number of connection before we hit this other endgame condition. And one of the things that we kind of ran into as a result of that was the game is relatively short in the number of exchanges there are, which means you don't really get that many opportunities to buy cards. And so the decks remain very small. One of the other levers or pieces that we were experimenting with this playtest that came up because of some of the problems that we were continuing to have with the buy row was, when I brought the game over to your house, my buy row and my sense of how we were going to use the currency, again, was very much more in line with this traditional deck builder style, where you have your chain You play your cards, get your currency, spend your currency, it clears out, and then we move on to the next chain. And the next person goes and builds their enthusiasm, spends, and moves on. One of the other things that we tried was moving to use a little bit of the static enthusiasm idea that Peter had in the other versions that we've played, where enthusiasm carried over between rounds. Once we moved to holding enthusiasm over, we got stuck in a different kind of loop, a loop that we didn't really enjoy. The first person who played, when Jason would take a turn, Jason would get close to enough enthusiasm to earn connection, and then would buy a card for his deck. And then the holdover, on my turn, we would get up to the number for connection, and I would buy a victory point and not have anything to spend. And so we got stuck in this loop of Jason adding cards to his deck and having carryover for us, and me completing our enthusiasm pile to get victory points or connection points.
Yeah, so my deck was like developing, and Mark's wasn't, but he was buying the connection point, the victory point, and it just wasn't very interesting. But for me, Mark, I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed, and we would play games, only half games. We'd play just the five connection points, or I think one round we played only the five rounds, and we realized we weren't going to win. There was no way to win. But I really enjoyed making all of these tweaks, trying this, trying that, doing something different. I really loved how open you were to the ideas that I was having and sharing with you, and we're just like, let's do it. Let's try it. Let's try it for a round.
It's funny that you mentioned earlier that Peter hasn't seen this version yet, because he and I have talked a little bit. I talked about what this playtest that you and I were setting up was going to look like and how it was likely to be kind of a radical departure from where we had been. And I was talking to Peter today and he was like, oh, I put together this change log so we can document what we've changed along the way. So that'll be something that we'll share out and start working with as we continue to iterate and kind of go back and forth between these different versions as we bring in things that work well, things that don't work well, things that are fun, things that aren't fun, and kind of build hopefully something that moves from not very interesting yet to very interesting and very compelling.
That's the goal. That's what we're trying to do.
You know, I keep thinking about the way playing the game with Monica was different from the way playing it with you was. Not just because Monica and I were really just playing and you and I were more working, but more for that difference in, I felt like I brought my role-playing character to the playtest with Monica, and I did not bring that to the playtest with you. And so kind of something that I think we should talk about, and coincides to the way that you talked about the possibility of packaging this game or selling this game, what is the role-playing element feel that we want? Because when Peter pitched the game, like Star-Crossed Realms is a nod to a deck builder. It is also a nod to a role-playing game.
That is what we have to figure out. And I think, Mark, there's actually a third way to think about this game. I think number one is what we've been talking about is you could play this and have some fun with role-playing, and you could answer the questions seriously, or you could be silly and, you know, or you can just give answers that aren't you, right? You can role-play. The second way to think about it is you can just play to win. You can say, we're just building enthusiasm and our goal is to get a connection and whatever the metric we set. I think there's a third way. It could actually be played on a date by two people on a first date. Like I can imagine a scenario where, you know, people are trying to decide what to do on a date. It's like, oh, we can go grab coffee. We could go do this. We can go for a walk. It's like, have you heard about that dating game? Have you heard about Star-Crossed Realms? No, I've never heard of it. No, it's a game you can play like on a date. Do you want to play that? We can go down to Game Parlor and play that. And you could actually not role play the responses. You can just respond. You can just, you know, there's some of the cards in there that say, tell a good story. Okay, tell me a good story, right? I put the person on the spot. Tell me a good story. You got a good story? You have a card in there that says two truths and a lie. I love that game. You could play that game on a date. So not only are you playing the game to win the connection score, you're actually playing the game to find out about the other person. So I think that's the third way you could play this game. We have to figure out what it is we really want to build. Do we want to build a game where we are encouraging and we want people and we sell it as a role play game? Or do we want to build it and just sell it as, no, this is just a game that you sit down and you play with somebody and these are fun, interactive things that you get to do, but you don't necessarily have to do a backflip, Mark. You don't necessarily have to tell a good story.
I'm going to die on the hill that backflip has to be in the game.
There's no way. I'm going to die on the hill that backflip cannot be in the game.
We're both going to be dead.
how do we both die? Isn't just one of us there?
Lead designer gets to break the tie.
Ooh, Peter, let me give you a compliment.
Better be a heartfelt story to get some extra enthusiasm for you.
I will tell you a dirty little secret about Mark.
He knows all my secrets.
That's true. So we have to like figure out what it is we really want to accomplish for the experience of playing it. I think all three could be valid. I don't know yet.
I think that's one of the things that we go to discuss behind the scenes and bring back when we've had a more systematized way of thinking about it or working through those questions as a design team. There were a few other small elements that I was hoping to get into this version that didn't make it because time constraints or I didn't find a good solution that met the objectives that we needed to meet for this particular playtest. Backflip fell into this category for me. There's this element of when a person takes some kind of risk on their date, when they tell that heartfelt story, when they do the backflip, it creates, it's the person doing it, taking this risk that then presents the opportunity for connection to build. That was like a flavor piece or an effect, an experience of the gameplay that I think would be a really compelling space to play with. And I just didn't find a good solution for how would I bring that into the game. But thinking about the way cards are designed, like heartfelt story comes to mind for this backflip, but these things that are kind of symbolic of taking a risk to really put yourself out there, like that's how you build connection, right? I share something and then the person either like accepts that or doesn't. And there's an interesting tension in the way that that works with enthusiasm in the game that I just didn't quite solve for. And then there were other pieces from Peter's version of the game that I think are very compelling and interesting, the character traits that I didn't rework in a way that functioned with this deck or this version of the playtest. So there are still kind of these like outlier things that we need to also consider that I think become the core identity, the soul of the game, now that I think we have something that is more close to what the final gameplay starts to look like.
What's next?
You know, one of the things that we haven't done that we said we were going to do at the beginning of the project is we have not played very many new games.
Yes, I agree.
You've played Gloomhaven?
Yes, that's all I play now.
I think we have to recommit to playing more games. And it's not just because I want to hang out with you more, though I do. It is more about developing our eye for mechanic, for things that work, for things that are fun, for the aesthetics of a game that was good enough to publish and people bought. We're in such the early phases of building our game that it is hard to imagine what a finished product could look like. And I think we need more strong examples of finished products that we can talk about and deconstruct to guide questions and inform the way that we playtest going forward.
I love this. That is a great idea. This was not in the show doc. This was Mark coming and being like, this is what we need to work on. And I think you're right. I want to call it Misplay Deconstructed. That's what I want to do.
It should be a series.
There we go.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Ajos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord.
You gotta start with, where are we?
Where are we?
Less mad and more...
Not mad, I'm tired.
And not getting like three at a time.
Good choice of words there.